live from the Allstate Showcase Studio. This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
To go. 6:11 in the morning, 720 WGN. It is the Steve Cochran Show, the triumphant return of Mary Sandberg Boyle, Comcast Sportsnet. Woo-woo! Got the whole gang back together today. Myself, Dave Bennett, Mary Vandeveld, Steve Krasanich, Sandberg Boyle, Comcast Sportsnet, and Mikey Jacobson producing. All right, why don't
Mary
we...
Mary looks very tan, by
did
the
Sandberg
way.
Bring us back anything? Did she bring us back tchotchkes?
Souvenirs?
Mary, the gang, the seventh floor wants to know if you brought them things. Yeah. Funny because
we're not asking.
Because they always bring you things
I didn't
when they
ask.
Go on vacation.
Yeah.
We're not asking, but the seventh floor wants to know.
Yeah. Right. I did not bring anybody anything.
Oh. There you go.
Thanks, okay. Mary.
All right, there's your answer. Sand.
I didn't think you would have wanted food from Mexico brought back.
You're not allowed to.
By the way, you missed Dave Bennett's birthday, which we're actually going to be celebrating later in the week. And Dave, why don't you tell Mary the one gift that you did get early?
I got socks from Andrea.
They're
nice. Say kale.
They're kale
on them.
Socks.
Kale socks.
Like, that's
kale.
No, they say kale. Yeah.
Kale. Yeah. Kale,
that's cute.
Isn't that good?
Are they golf socks?
That's very cute.
No,
they're just like dressy socks. They're like trendy designer.
I did
socks.
Wish Dave happy birthday on Facebook, which I don't typically do to people. But
you were
since
supposed
I wasn't
to be
here.
Thank you.
Oh, I well, you know, I
yeah. Why were you on Facebook in Mexico?
I'm on. What do people do at the pool?
Right.
I'm always perusing my social media and whatnot.
Got to keep up on the Instagram. Got to take a picture of your, you know, the pool with your big toe in it. Like everybody else does.
Oh, I didn't do. I don't post any pictures of myself. But it is really hot in Mexico at the end of May. That's I can confirm that.
Yeah, you probably can't sit by the pool very long.
I was able to tough it out, Mayor, but it's, it's not for the faint of heart. It's hot.
It's a dirty job, but somebody had to
somebody
do it.
Somebody had to do it.
What was it, 80?
Oh, no, it's like 88, but the real feel is 105.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
That's too hot for me.
It was warm.
That's beautiful. That's perfect. Would you rather be hot or cold?
Oh, hot.
Me cold. Too. Me too. I hate being cold. You know, I'd rather be hot and then remove layers.
There was a time I would have preferred the cold, and I have found, and this is not an age thing, or maybe it is, but I just think, I get tired of feeling cold. Plus, it's always freezing in this place.
It is. I know. I always have to call the boiler room, and then they hang up on me.
It's always hot in this place.
No, at this place, seriously, is like a mood ring,
it
if
is.
You think
yes.
about it.
It's I either mean, really hot or really cold.
Yesterday it was cold.
You can't win. You can't win.
Well, I like it hot. It was hot. But it was the biggest problem was it was really humid and my hair was a hot mess the whole time.
Oh, so. Like the Monica from Friends?
I would blow it out in the room, and the second you go outside, it was like frizzy and curly, but not pretty curly.
Was it Pat had the same problem?
Yes, he had the same problem. I think he uses more product, though, so his hair tames a little bit better. But
I know you do. You and Pat, because you guys both have great hair, but guys just do not understand when we have a bad hair day. It just ruins everything.
Oh, yeah. I have bad hair days, man.
Well, you've got a lot of hair, Steve.
Yeah,
it goes
have a
like
lot
poof.
Of hair.
Yeah, you have that kind of hair, too. So you would have been feeling it down in my skin.
But welcome back. We missed you.
Thank you. I would say, I know you sent me a message on Tuesday.
Oh, yeah.
Miss you. And I was like, I haven't been gone long enough to really feel like, I truly miss everybody.
You know what, though? It was your response was so cute. We were playing in the Patriot Golf Outing, which I think you played in with us last year.
I did.
I took a picture of myself, Steve, and Dave, and the caddy. Mm-hmm. He filled in for you. And we said, we miss you. And then your response was so cute. You said, I like the blue jacket. Where'd you get that?
I know. Because I was like, miss you. And I'm like, should I say miss you back? I'm like, but I haven't been gone long enough to like miss you back, really. Because when you're on vacation, it seems like, you know, you're like, oh.
It's one of those salutations that do you really mean it? I mean, I missed you.
Right.
I don't know
it was
Steve
a nice
Dave,
caption, but you did look in the blue
jacket.
It's
the glue that holds this place together. I mean,
that's true, but you really weren't gone very long.
No.
you're back. You went out of the country, and you were gone for like 3 days from work.
That's what Steve asked me, and one of them was a Memorial Day we all were
right.
Gone.
We were all out.
Steve last night asked me if I felt recharged, and I'm like, I just had like 2 more days off. It wasn't like,
Right. It's okay, though.
Let's talk about a 10-day vacay, and then we'll talk about recharging.
Like, when I leave the country, you guys all miss me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, mm-hmm. Sure.
But you always bring us back something, though.
I typically do.
I know.
I wasn't there long enough to really acquire anything.
You could have got us some vanilla.
To souvenir shop.
Vanilla's great.
Yeah.
That's so touristy, though. That's so cheap.
So what? It's good stuff.
It is good vanilla, but I know. I'm not nice like that.
That's
well,
okay.
We are glad you're back. We did miss you.
Thank
wink,
you.
Wink. 6:15. We will do the top six at six. Boy, there's a lot going on, including some J.B. Pritzker news. This is crazy. Who thought Rod Blagojevich would be part of the top six at six again? Flashback. 6:15. Let's get traffic first. Here's Mary.
From the Steve Cochran Auditorium in the lovely Sunrise Hotel, it's time to get your kicks.
Get your kicks. Get your kicks.
With the top six at six. Sponsored by American Weathermakers, the home of the 60-Minute Man.
And Nick will join us in just a second. Here's the deal, and this is a shocker. Springfield did not get a budget done.
Unbelievable.
I mean, you could have knocked me over with a feather. I got a couple of calls late last night. There won't be a budget. I said, what?
Right.
I said, what?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're all stunned. I mean, who could see it coming? You can't expect to be able to Springfield to see it coming.
Ridiculous.
A lot of them walking around in Springfield. I could see Mike Madigan walking around going, what am I forgetting? What am I forgetting? What am I forgetting? Oh, yeah, the budget.
You know, and enough with the pomp and circumstance. Enough with the, hey, we're gonna take June to figure it out.
Yeah, shut the hell up.
Back.
Here's the message of Springfield.
Enough.
Shut the hell up. I don't want to hear from you. This is when a 15-year-old kid does 10 things wrong, and you go, you know what, just shut up. Just go to your room. Just go to your room, Springfield. Do not come out until you think about what you've done. You think about what you continue to do. I don't want to hear any BS. Oh, you know, that almost got up. I don't want to hear any BS. I don't want to hear anything. I don't want to hear anything from any of them.
Grzanich had a great point this morning. We do our jobs. That is their job. We would all be fired.
Oh, we'd be out the door. We'd
we
be
were
gone.
Doing your job.
Well, the same goes for the president.
2 years.
The president, Mike Madigan and the president would both be fired immediately. There's no company that would put up with it. J.B. Pritzker is trying to explain something this morning, that being that he was sucking up to Rod Blagojevich in the months before Rod Blagojevich was taken out in cuffs. If you go back to like 2003, that's when Blago was originally being investigated. And the heat got heavy after that. Everybody knew he was dirty. And then Obama's got to appoint a senator, and he talks to Pritzker about maybe appointing him because he's a big donor. And really, that's what you want in a senator. And then Pritzker says, no, I'd rather be treasurer, because the thought was Alex Giannoulis would step aside. Would step aside. I like to call him Alex.
Yeah.
None of that played out that way. But it certainly doesn't look good for the guy that wants to be governor that he's on tape sucking up to Rod Blagojevich.
Absolutely not. And the statement, did you see the statement released yesterday by Pritzker saying, well, I didn't ask to be treasurer. That was just a suggestion. I didn't want the Senate seat.
The only thing good about this story for Pritzker is it takes the heat off the fact that he took $250,000 back on his property taxes. The head of DCFS resigned. DCFS is got a lot of people who work very hard and do their best to try to do the right thing and do a good job every day, and a lot of problems as well. And the problems seem to have started at the top. George Sheldon made it official yesterday. He resigned. He's going to go lead a nonprofit organization called Our Kids in Florida. An ethics probe continues at DCFS. Among the things that are problematic are a contest for cases to be closed, which may have led to the child dying in Joliet recently.
Right, Samaje Crosby. There's no excuse for the caseworker being there 3 hours beforehand in squalor with 15 people living in that house.
And then walking out.
Then saying, well, just because it's dirty doesn't mean there wasn't love.
Just outrageous. President Trump will announce today whether the U.S. is going to withdraw from the Paris Accords. We'll get into that in more detail coming up. He's also considering rolling back parts of the opening to Cuba, that maybe we won't be able to go to Cuba. I remember you and I talking about this when you went to Cuba, saying, go now. You don't know what's going to happen after the election.
That's right. Absolutely.
And there may be limits on when you can travel, how you can travel, and if you can travel, and whether sports can travel as well. And I pointed Dave at that because he's sports.
Yeah.
But what happens if you have a trip booked to Cuba?
You are screwed, my friend. Yeah. Or as they say in Cuba, you are screwed, my friend.
Get a credit. Cuba wants us. Cuba, their economy wants our economy.
Well, sure, they want our money. Absolutely. Right. Senators expect the former FBI Director James Comey to testify as early as next week. And let me get Nick in here for a bonus item on the Top 6 at 6. Hi, buddy. How are you?
I'm good, sir.
A 6-year-old named Edith Fuller is the youngest person ever to qualify for the National Spelling Bee. So, Nick, the word is Covfefe. Covfefe. Please spell Covfefe.
My spell check is off, so I can't do it.
The word is Covfefe. The correct prep spelling was C-O-V-F-E-F-E. C-O-V-F-E-F-E. Covfefe.
Nick, you could have asked for the country of origin.
That would be Trumpland. Trumpland would be the country of origin.
Use it in a sentence.
I can't believe we elected a guy that tweeted out Covfefe. Huh? How's that? Not bad.
Now I got it, yeah.
How are you, buddy?
I'm good, man.
Basking in the glow. Oh, by the way, the Top 6 at 6, sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men. Basking in the glow of your walk of fameness?
It was great. I have to say, it was an incredible day, a day I'll never forget. I was honored, but I have to say that it was the highlight was just, you know, seeing my parents, you know, experience it and experiencing it with them because they were kind of over the moon, and it was
kind of over the moon. Good God, your mother wouldn't stop talking about you. I said, okay, I get it. You love him. He's good.
Yeah, it was a special day. It was great all the way around. Yeah.
Yeah, your mom was great. Your dad's always great. And, you know, that's the first time I ever met your mom.
Is that really?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Wow. And surprising all these years.
It was very cool because I got to do a little bit of what you got to do, though I don't know that you did it as much because you probably would have choked up, but I kind of kept an eye on them and watched them watch you be honored. So, and the Walk of Fame continues to put the legends in cement in the sidewalk, and I don't mean that in a mafia way. So you can come by and see Nick and Nick's plaque anytime here near the right behind us in Pioneer Court. So pretty cool.
Yeah, it's pretty great.
All right, let's go through some movies here. Captain Underpants, the first epic movie. As you know, I do all of Captain Underpants stunts. What did you think, or what will you think?
Well, let me just say this. I'm really looking forward to this movie, and I know that sounds ridiculous, but I love the books.
Are great. Ross Cochran's favorites when he was a kid.
Oh, God, they were so funny. And, you know, and I remember I discovered the books, but I don't know, maybe 18 years ago, you know, and I just saw them in the bookstore and I picked one up and I looked at it and I was like, God, this is so funny. And so I hope they stay true to the spirit of the books, because if they do, it's going to be a very funny movie. And, you know, it's about these kids who hypnotize their principal, their very strict principal, into thinking that he's a superhero named Captain Underpants.
Right.
And then he tries to solve crimes and, you know, help people out. The voice talent on this is pretty remarkable. Kevin Hart, Ed Helms is the voice of Captain Underpants.
Which is perfect, by the way.
Yeah. Nick Kroll, Jordan Peele, Kristen Shaw, written by a lot of people who have written great stuff for Comedy Central. And I have a feeling that this is going to be very entertaining. And I mean, obviously the juggernaut this weekend is going to be Wonder Woman. But, you know, Wonder Woman is PG-13. So if you want to take your kids to see something, you have Captain Underpants, and especially if they're fans of the book. And the books are hugely popular, and obviously not just among kids, but, you know, I'm a 51-year-old man who thinks they're hilarious. So.
Right, and when Nick is at the movie alone watching it, he's not a creep. He just finds it funny. Is there a movie weekend called Dean?
Yeah.
Is this the story of Dean Richards?
It all takes place on Bradley Place. It's the writing and directorial debut of comedian and author Dimitri Martin, who's a very, very
he's good.
Clever. Yeah, he's great, funny guy.
If you like Stephen Wright and I'm trying to think of who else you'd put in the blender, but he's got
he's got that deadpan thing happening for sure.
Right.
And it's weird observational humor that's just a little bit out there. And, you know, and I've really got high hopes for this one, too. He plays an illustrator who is trying to keep his dad's second wife has died. And so his dad, played by Kevin Kline, is trying to burn down the house. He's going crazy. So Dimitri Martin, as Dean, moves in with him. He's an illustrator and he falls in love. And the other characters in the movie are played by Kevin Kline, Mary Steenburgen, and Gillian Jacobs, who continues to have a pretty remarkable couple of years with the TV show Love on Netflix and Don't Think Twice, the Berbiglia movie about improv.
Oh, yeah. I was trying to think of who it is. Okay, now I got it.
She's Britta from Community. she's remarkable, and I love her, and she plays the main love interest in it. It's getting really good reviews. It's really low budget, but if you like Dimitri Martin, he wrote it, he directed it, it's going to have that sensibility all over it. And again, this is big counter programming to, you know, the big animated movie and Wonder Woman.
Hearing great things about Wonder Woman, are we hyping it too hard?
Hearing great things. Yeah, I haven't seen it. I'm going to go Saturday. And, you know, it's one of these things where I think the reason why people are going so crazy over this movie is because the DC movies have just been terrible. You know, like, it's just, you know, Suicide Squad was awful. Batman versus Superman was awful. And, you know, once, you know, Warner Brothers started releasing these movies and took over the DC universe, they've hired real idiots to make the movies, and they've really mishandled it. So the fact that this movie is getting the kind of reviews it's getting, I think it partially it's because people are just shocked that they've made a good DC movie. And then partially it's because it's a good movie.
Partially, too, because it's a female superhero. I mean, I'm so looking forward. Nick, I don't remember the last time I was going to go see a movie the day it opened. So excited about that.
Well, that's because Andrea, Nick, you don't know this. Oh. Andrea has some superpowers as well.
Oh, yeah.
Now, we can't reveal them at this time, but she does have superpowers.
Well, I just, you know, here's the thing about it. I don't know what they're projecting this movie to make. I think some people are saying $75 million. But judging by the response that I've seen online, on my show, and just in general talks with people, Andrea, you're right.
Yeah.
The women are going to come out for this movie in droves, and that's really not the case with superhero movies at all. So in addition to the superhero fans and the comic book geeks, you are going to have a massive contingency of women seeing this movie. And I think this, you know, they're saying $75 million. I think it's going to be over $100 million.
Yeah.
Yeah. Plus you get a lot of little girls.
Right.
You know,
totally.
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, the little girls, the women are really, really, really excited about this movie. And the fact that it's got such great buzz.
And then she still has the rope of truth.
The lasso.
The lasso.
The golden lasso.
The lasso, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's
the golden and the invisible jet.
Right. Right. I think if I were, I don't know, 20 years younger and Gal Gadot threw a rope around me, I'd tell her anything she wanted to.
Yeah, I agree.
Notice how I threw 20 years younger in to make it slightly less creepy?
Right.
Yeah.
It is still creepy.
Yeah, that's you know what? I can't disagree with that. Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom at the AMC Movie Co. Theater in Rosemont. That's next film club screening. When is it?
This Tuesday, the 6th, $14 to get in. That includes free popcorn, and you can dine in the theater to have all the food brought to you. And it's on the big screen, digitally remastered in 4K, and it's going to be so great to see that on the big screen again. It's my favorite of the Indiana Jones movies. It's just nonstop action and adventure from beginning to end, and it's really funny. And we got tickets available at Fandango.com. Reserve your seats now. It's this Tuesday night. You can meet at 7 for dinner. The movie starts at 8, and we'll talk about it afterwards.
And is Temple of Doom where he shoots the swordsman?
Well, no, that's Raiders.
That's Raiders, okay.
But they make, because Temple of Doom, they make a joke about that. Another guy comes up to him to fight him, and he reaches for his gun, and it's not in his holster.
That's right.
But the problem with that joke is that the movie's a prequel. Like, it takes place before Raiders, so that didn't occur yet.
Oh, comedy. Comedy out of sequence. Whatever. Have a great weekend, buddy. We'll talk to you soon.
You too, man. Talk to you soon.
Walk of Famer Nick and a big story next.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
I went to an Ivy League school. I'm very highly educated. I know words. I had the best words.
Do you think people should be concerned that the president posted somewhat of an incoherent tweet last night and that it then stayed up for hours?
No.
I know words. I had the best words.
Why did it stay up so long? Is no one watching this?
No, I think the president and a small group of people know exactly what he meant. Like,
but there's no better word than stupid. Right? There is none.
Nice job, Jake. Could it be one of my favorites? And a happy Covfefe to you, Chuck Todd.
Hello, Covfefe to you.
Why, in God's name, would Sean Spicer say it was an inside joke and we all know what it means when it was clearly a typo? Why not even own the typo?
Oh, I didn't hear the word joke. I heard him create a new conspiracy theory for us. The president and a small group of people know what he means.
So what, he word? Putin, and who else?
Yeah. Right. Is it a safe word, a safety word? Go back. Like, you know, I this is the part. And, you know, if I get one more complaint call from somebody over that White House, I don't understand why we get bad coverage. It's the arrogance, dismissiveness, and silliness with which they treat any question, any inquiry into this White House right now. I mean, that was a ridiculous response. You know, Sean Spicer obviously everybody always says it's an unenviable task and all this stuff. But that, you know, if he's truly that fearful of anything he says that at all is dismissive of something the president does, you know, then, you know, he really shouldn't be in public service at all, because he only should work for an individual, because he doesn't seem to at all have the ability to think for himself or think, because
it's embarrassing.
It's sort of like you just want to sit here and you just wanted to scream.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, this is your problem.
Yeah.
You and your crazy alternative explanation.
Yeah, well, you make a story out of nothing. That thing could have gone away in and out. Well, it could have gone away yesterday morning when Trump actually sort of kind of made fun of himself. It could have been done then.
Yeah. Why don't you just have a, you know, my God, the president joked about it.
So,
John Spicer couldn't.
I have a second why for you. Why, in a voluntary agreement, would we back out of the Paris climate change situation and line up with those two world superpowers, Syria and Nicaragua, at a time like this?
You know, there's one way to track every move that President Trump has made. If Obama did it, he wants to reverse it.
Yeah.
If Obama advocates for it, he wants to undo it.
He's a new girlfriend. I don't want anything your ex-wife had.
That's exactly right. I mean, because he doesn't, you know what he doesn't do? He doesn't offer the alternative path. Okay, we're pulling out of Paris. Okay, for what? What are you going to tell corporate America, who has to work on a global stage and has to abide by these rules, is going to end up abiding by rules all over the world? And, you know, what do you tell them on how to handle this? So, you know, he never offers an alternative. He's going to, you know, supposedly reverse Cuba. Okay. And for what purpose? What's the policy purpose here? What's the ultimate goal? You know, all of these things he does, it's just like, I want to repeal healthcare, but they haven't really thought through the replacement. You know, he knows what he wants to undo, whatever Obama's stamp is on. But there is just no ability to offer sort of a coherent alternative path. And, you know, that to me is what makes these, I think it's what's made these even more, you know, they're no one's saying that they're, you know, these are decisions that everybody's rallying around, everybody agrees to. If they were, it would be easy. And these decisions that he's going to make, you know, you're going to make one group of people mad here, one group, but he doesn't even offer an alternative vision. So it just doesn't look well thought through.
Chuck, that was my question to you. What's the point? Why reverse the sanctions in Cuba? Why tick off Germany and Angela Merkel? And in the grand scheme of things, is this that big of a deal, or is it going to cause more damage than we even think right now on the surface?
I don't think he understands any of it. I don't think he understands any of it. Yeah. You know, and I don't like calling people stupid. But he is not intellectually on any level ready for this job, in my opinion. And I think he proves it day after day.
Well, I think you're seeing there are more people that went into that administration believing that they could, you know, tame the tiger, whatever metaphor you want to use. And it's becoming increasingly clear you can't do that. That, you know, yes, he seems to be intellectually incurious about everything. And I think that's the safe path I'm going to go down. I don't think he's intellectually curious.
Yeah, I think we're talking about the same thing in a wink, wink, covfefe way.
And in that sense, I think that there is, you're getting more and more folks around him that I think are just, they're not going to be as willing to put themselves on the line for him. And I think he's going to have a hard time finding new people willing to come. Quality people to come into the White House. The only people that are going to be willing to come in are people that have no business coming in the first place.
Well, I mean, you bring up a good point. I mean, how hard should it be to hire a director of the FBI, one of the world's great law enforcement organizations, and nobody seems to want that job?
Everybody who comes in with under the Trump umbrella gets tainted by the Trump name. ask, you know, I think everybody is watching H.R. McMaster, who had a pretty pristine reputation,
yep,
bipartisan, and they're watching with some of his colleagues are watching in horror as he essentially wastes away his goodwill.
Let's go to the other side for just a moment. You know, God bless Hillary Clinton and A Long Walk in the Woods, because I think she needs to go back there until her book comes out. You know, she's not obviously willing to say, yep, it was me, it was Wisconsin, we blew it. It's not okay to say I take full responsibility for it, but. Mm-hmm. All of this coverage looks bad. She ought to turn down a few interviews, plug her book when it comes out, and let that be it.
You know, look, I think she's getting caught being a human being. She can't let go. And she clearly has gone down this rabbit hole. What I found fascinating watching her yesterday, I had the same cringe moment. You're like, oh, I take full responsibility, but that's not why I lost. And Literally my head hit the table,
right.
Hit my desk. But she's a human being, and she's gone down this road, and she's gone down a rabbit hole of digital. I guess I'm impressed. I don't know if I want to be impressed that she knew the minutiae of how fake news work, how the algorithms work.
Yeah.
And you're just sitting there going, oh, my God, she has spent months stewing on this.
Right.
She gets up every day and stews on this. And you're just going, boy, this is not a healthy place to be. At the same time, maybe this is the therapy, right? I think I saw in an interview, she's never seen a therapist. I think this is her version of it. She's going to work through this. And I think the more mistakes the president makes, the more frustrated she gets. And look, who wants to have on their epitaph, you're the candidate that lost to Donald Trump?
Well, that's the greater point, because it never should have been. It never should have been close. And I completely agree with you. And she's fully entitled to do whatever she wants. But the key to any future position that doesn't include stop bitching Hillary is to take the high road in public and then break things at the House.
Can I tell you, so we did this issue yesterday on my show, and, you know, look, I'm always wary of viewer feedback. It's sort of like, you know, over-exaggerating in one place or another. But it's amazing how polarizing Hillary Clinton going through this is among Democrats.
Yeah,
on the
exactly.
Left. I had a lot of women viewers who were like, I can't believe how negative you were on here. Let this woman speak. Let her, you know, she had all these forces against her, unlike any other candidate ever. And very much saw it from this sort of a gender point of view. And then you had other chunk of Democrats we'd hear from going, enough already, stop looking backwards, look forward. So it's interesting how polarizing she is, not just in the country, but even inside the Democratic Party, but how also I think that what she's doing, this tour, this sort of cathartic thing she's doing, how it's viewed differently, I think, depending on gender, depending on your gender lens.
Totally agree.
Yeah, and also, and I'll let you run on this because I know we're over time here, but the Democrats ought to be deeply concerned that they have nobody to fill the bill at the top of the party in true terms who you could go, yeah, but what does this person think? Because when Hillary speaks, she's speaking for all the Democrats until further notice, because Joe Biden's out there, and I like the vice president a lot. But he's 2 years older than she is.
That's a great point. Right. And the key to that, no top women.
Yeah.
Think about that.
The Republicans have this large group of interesting younger Republican women, and the Democrats are dumb.
A lot of good that did the Republican Party. They still have that.
Right. Good point.
All right, stop bringing facts in here, Chuck Todd. Meet the Press and MTP Daily. You got a guest you want to plug?
Buddy. Not yet.
All right.
It's Thursday. It's a little early, so we got another day.
All right. Well, you let us know. Chuck Todd, nobody better, and he has to put up with the crap right there. That should be a slogan. I put up with the crap right here because he's right on the firing line. But, I recommend MTP Daily highly if you have a chance to be around MSNBC at 4 o'clock Chicago time, because it's a mini Meet the Press every day.
The Steve Cochran Show.
Our plan is for the House, Democrats and Republicans, to work through the month of June, continue to work on budget making. We will expect participation by all members of the House.
Today, we've seen a complete dereliction of duty by the majority in the General Assembly.
There's a concern. They just don't have a high level of confidence in how the governor has conducted himself.
The majority in the General Assembly passed phony bills, trying to manage phony headlines rather than solving the real problems that are facing the people of Illinois.
What would you do if you were stuck in one place and every day was exactly the same?
They say we're young and we don't know, won't find out till we grow.
Jake's so good to them, giving him more of Dave Bennett's money.
While that's true,
you got me.
Come on, Dave, you can afford it. A little extra something for Jake.
I just gave him something.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Go Cats.
It wasn't money.
Advice? 713, Pat Brady is here, and Bill Brady is on the line. State Senator Bill Brady, a gubernatorial candidate and swell guy from the 44th, who joins us now on the phone. Mr. Brady, it's been a while. Nice to talk to you again.
Good to be with you, Steve. And hello, Pat.
Hey, Billy. I can't believe I can call you Grandpa now, all the years I've known you. So congratulations.
Three times so far.
Good for you.
I got my first one. It's the greatest, isn't it?
Oh, it is. It is. And they're all up there in Chicago right now.
Well, I hope they're better children than we were growing up.
I think they will be.
Actually, you can hold that over each other. Don't tell the grandkids what we did. All right, so here's what the state of Illinois doesn't need and the people of Illinois don't need. They don't need Mike Madigan coming out going, we're going to continue to work on this when it's been 2 years. There's no this is the basic duty of government. Get money, have a budget, spend the money appropriately. This isn't curing cancer. This isn't breaking down DNA in the basement. For Mike Madigan to talk to anybody about how we're going to keep working on it because we're such swell guys, it's just outrageous.
Well, not only is he the poster child of term limits, but he also has proven that the Democrats should not have a majority. If there was any reason to take a majority away from the House Democrats, yesterday's admittal to failure is absolute.
So what would happen? How is it that he couldn't even throw one of his whacked out $4 billion out of alignment budgets on the table? He didn't even present a budget.
Yeah, I think he's just lost it. I mean, I believe that even his caucus members who realize that we can't be that phony, it just shows that he does not have the ability to control that chamber and get something done. You know, whether you agreed with what Senator Colton, President Colton passed out of the Senate or not, and I did not agree with it, although I will give him credit for making measurable steps in
Absolutely.
The right direction. For Speaker Madigan to not even be able to get something out of his chamber is just proves that the utter failure that he has over in the House, and it's a reason that House needs to change. The people of Illinois, the voters know it. You know, we talked about some very serious things that needed to be done: a property tax relief in the form of a freeze, reforms in the business climate, which would have created jobs. Spending cap, which would have brought our budget in line, a balanced budget we introduced. These were very serious things that we discussed. They didn't even give him lip service over in the House. I mean, it's a tragedy that chamber is operating the way it is. We need to do some things in the Senate, but at least President Colton passed some measures and did negotiate with us. I give him credit. We made a lot of progress. We came so close to a budget. In the Senate, we are so close to an agreement. Leader Redonio and President Colton set out a course that got us very, very close. And the governor was supportive in ways that we needed him to be supportive. And we were close, but the House, I just don't understand even how they could adjourn.
Senator, does everybody down there, all the lawmakers, realize the implications that everybody is watching this? And I don't want to say laughingstock, but I think that in many ways we are. We have no budget. It's this constant back and forth. What has to give? Somebody's going to have to give, and something is going to have to give, and there eventually is going to need to be a balanced budget.
Well,
in the state of Illinois.
Let's get Pat Brady in on this as well, because you witness this all the time. So between Pat Brady and Bill Brady, in my opinion, nothing is going to change. And I want you to people to take this at the exact literally the way I mean this. Nothing is going to change as long as Mike Madigan is in that job or alive. Because if he is in that position, he is not going to budge. Am I wrong?
Well, I mean, we've been saying that. And I'm sorry, Bill. But
I am wrong?
No. You're absolutely right. And we've been saying that for a long, long time. But, and Bill, you see it. You've seen it for years. It's more about personal politics than it is about good public policy. And yesterday's a great example. We didn't get a budget, but we got a big Chicago Public Schools bailout. It's all about politics. It has nothing to do with good, sound policy. I know Bill may have a different opinion, but that's my view.
No, you're absolutely right. You know, I'm going to tell you something. When I first came to the General Assembly, I thought term limits were a function of the voter and the day of elections. It took me about 6 years in the House, the Illinois House, to realize that we need term limits, if only to end the tyranny of speakerships. And whether it's Mike Madigan or somebody else, but in this case, it's Mike Madigan. And the arrogance, I'll call it, to not even pass a budget, but then turn around and bail out the Chicago public school systems because it's politically expedient and in your backyard is really a pox on the whole state. I mean, you couldn't have seen anything more amazing than what we witnessed in the House yesterday.
Didn't Bill, is this correct? 70% of that funding now goes to the Chicago public school, or 70% increase. Is that accurate?
Yeah, what happened yesterday is they released what we will call a spreadsheet that showed how an additional $700 million in funding under a formula that they produced would, how that money would go. And the arrogance of it showing that 70% of the new money would go to the Chicago public school system while only 20% of the students in the state of Illinois are in the Chicago public school system. So, you know, we want to help Chicago. We think they deserve fair and equitable treatment, but not at the expense of the rest of the students in this state. And it's about the students. And for them to do this just shows that they are all about political power and not about policy.
All right, I'll let you go on this, Senator. Senator Bill Bradley's a guest. Pat Brady's here.
Brady.
What'd I say?
Bradley.
Well, he was a good shooter.
You called me Bradley when I walked in today, so.
I got Bill Bradley on the mind.
He's a wealthy Democrat, liberal Democrat.
Hey, easy. Like, we need more of that. All right, so.
I was a wrestler. He's a basketball player.
So here's the question, or here's the thought process. Every time we talk about this, those who are not Rauner fans come forward and say, well, the governor doesn't submit a budget. The governor has submitted a budget in the past. However, taking the words of the state constitution, which I don't believe I'm taking out of context here, the governor shall submit a budget for approval. What role does the governor have to play in putting this forward? Because, you know, knowing a little bit about this behind the scenes, this is set up for him to politically fail if he does put a budget out, because there's no way he can put a budget out that won't look like he's trying to kill the weakest elements of the state. Is that true?
Well, let me just say this. The governor introduced a budget. He's always introduced a balanced budget. The grand bargain, which was put together by President Colleton and Chris Redonia in a very positive, comprehensive way, was a very good document. We didn't get quite there. But one of the elements that we're missing were budget. I asked, because I was negotiating part of the grand bargain for Senator Redonio, I asked if I could use the governor's Bureau of the Budget to introduce a budget. For them to say he hasn't signed on to a budget, he has said publicly that the budget that I introduced with the help of his administration and the Bureau of the Budget, because we just frankly don't have the resources and Senate staff, he has said that is a good budget. The governor not only has introduced a good budget, he said that as part of the grand bargain, the budget I introduced was a workable document. So that's nothing but a lame excuse. The person who's never introduced a balanced budget is Mike Madigan.
Right.
And that's the truth. And you're right. The General Assembly is charged, which is why I introduced a balanced budget, is charged with producing a balanced budget and sending it to the governor's desk. The governor's fulfilled his obligation. It's the House. And this is what is so extraordinarily ridiculous. I don't think you can probably find one House chamber in the nation, I can't say that for sure, that hasn't delivered a balanced budget to the governor's desk as much as the Illinois House has failed to do so.
Oh, no, I'm sure we're leading in that delightful category. Senator, thank you. Good luck to all of us. I don't know any other words.
Well, we need it. But it's important. As I said, we start off, my three grandchildren and my children, grown children, live and work in Chicago. I want to keep them there. And it becomes every day more increasingly difficult given the circumstances that the state faces.
Thank you, sir.
See you, Bill.
Pat Brady's going to hang around because I need him to, because we have a lot more to discuss here, including coming up, the Pritzker tapes. And Illinois' hot new couple, Rod Blagojevich and J.B. Pritzker. What would that couple, we have a nickname for the couple? Would
good
it be?
Hair. Good hair.
Pritzkovich?
Pritzkovich, not bad. Pritzker Blago. Pritzko.
There
Pritzko,
you go.
The Pritzko, there it is. The Pritzko, Pritzko tapes. There's a question here, Pat Brady, before we get to the Pritzker tapes. One of the texters, by the way, wanted to congratulate you on a fine job the other day with Anna DeVlantis.
Oh, thank you. It was a lot of fun.
For I thought you guys sounded great. Here's a texter. Steve, what would it take to start a statewide recall of all of these ineffective leaders?
Probably 600,000 signatures and a change to the Constitution and stuff that won't ever get through the people that control the power, levers of power here.
Plus, that's, they have to approve it. Think about it.
That's the great problem, because when corruption exists, as corruption exists here, those who have to change the laws are the ones that make the laws. So what is their incentive to change the laws? The only incentive is you throw them out of office.
Right. That means you have to get involved. And you have to be,
including in the primary process.
In the primary, and you have to vote. And as easy as it is to get cynical to listen to this every day, you need to get involved. It's too important. I agree with Senator Brady. We're at the tipping point, and there's no reason the state should be in the shape it's in.
It's absolutely ridiculous.
A lot of bad public policy.
When you're in Springfield and you run into lobbyists from around the country, they got to be just laughing at us.
Yep. I was in a meeting the other day. They were laughing. It's not funny. I mean, it's funny if you're sitting there. They think it's funny, but it's not if you live here, particularly if you have kids in the Chicago public schools or the gang and murder problem we have in the city. It's not funny that the state is in this shape. But when you have people that have been down there for 47 years, 46 years, that are interested only in political preservation themselves and keeping power, then good, sound public policy, this is what you get.
Corruption at the top. Is J.B. Pritzker part of this? Well, he's not doing a good job defending himself if he's not. First off, with this property tax thing, which you did a press conference on.
I did. He has a home, two homes, a $12 million mansion that he put $10 million into and had it assessed at $13 million, which is another story. But next to it, he bought another mansion for $3 million and ripped all the toilets out and claimed got an 83% reduction in his property taxes, $230,000.
Because that's cash back, homie.
Cash back. In fact, the time when all these budget crises are going on, we can't fund the Chicago public schools and other things, he's getting a check back from the county.
Yeah.
And it's a scam. It's a con job. And it's a con job that's been going on for a long, long time.
Now, his response to that was essentially, well, everybody does it.
No. Not everybody gets an 83% reduction in their
property. Well, not just that. If you're worth $4 billion or something close to that and you want to be the governor and the state's in the financial shape, you don't ask for the money back, even if your place is uninhabitable.
I mean, that only runs his jet for about 12 hours. What does he need it for? But the real rub to this to me is there's going to be a certain amount of tax dollars that are going to come out to fund what property tax funds. So it's not that we didn't have the funds. Somebody else has picked it up for him. Some other person paid more in tax because he paid less on this scam.
And the assessor's office, too, is just a giant mess anyway. Now it's even
bigger. The Berrios mess is ridiculous.
Oh,
you could do an entire show just on that. All right, so that leads us to this. The Chicago Tribune reports yesterday that the FBI's wiretaps of Rod Blagojevich back in 2008 happened to catch a number of conversations with J.B. Pritzker. Before you hear his response, here's a bit of the calls. You'll recognize one of the voices. The echo is before he went in jail. He was just in an echoey room.
Problem for you would be, same problem with the Senate, really. I've given you contributions.
No.
And what's that?
Total non-issue. Well, first of all, you give money to everybody, like Lisa Madigan, okay?
Yeah. No.
Which, incidentally, if you can do for me what you did for her before the end of the year, can you think about that?
Mm-hmm.
But
well, I can't. I mean, not while everything's up in the air, but I hear you. Yeah.
Okay.
I hear you. And
yeah.
But anyway,
if we go in that direction, though, if that does happen,
yeah.
I mean, there's some other people who can help us that you know.
Sure.
If you feel skittish about that, which I believe you shouldn't, but go ahead.
Yeah, I don't think we should even talk about it.
All right, fine.
I understand what you're saying.
Okay.
That's a small piece of the conversation that went on, which included, and we'll play some of this tape for you when Rick Pearson's here, J.B. Pritzker saying, I'm not so interested in the Senate, but boy, it'd be fun to be treasurer.
I hear you. I understand what you're saying.
I hear what you're talking about.
Let's not talk about it, right. But I understand what you're saying.
Right.
And by the way, Davey Pritzker's been invited in here. Chris Kennedy was here yesterday, and he's invited in here to come in and talk to me about any of this stuff.
I'm curious. Remember whose guy JB is. This is the Madigan guy.
Yes.
Madigan's
I'm curious
guy.
About his response, though, too, because they released a statement yesterday, and he was saying, well,
we got it. We got his response. Yeah, yeah. All right, roll it.
There was nothing inappropriate about my conversations with the governor. It should be unsurprising to people that after 25 years of doing public service in a variety of ways, that when an opportunity might have arisen for me to do public service, that I would be willing to do that. And that was what that conversation was all about.
No, that conversation was you sucking up to a guy who was on the verge of going to jail. And at the bare minimum, you have to question the judgment of why you would be speaking to Rod Blagojevich about anything.
He'd been under investigation since two years into his administration. It's probably 6 years prior to this conversation taking place. Everybody knew, it had been reported widely, that Rod was under investigation.
Sure. Right.
I think one of these tapes.
And everybody in Springfield knew he was dirty.
And for the reasons that he was talking about right here, his campaign contribution shakedowns. That's what they were looking at. It was citizens for Blagojevich. Everybody knew that.
And he's on a phone call where Rod Blagojevich is literally saying, hey, if you can do for me what you do for other people, I know you've done a lot for me in the past. If you can do that again, hey, just think about it. He's literally begging for money. Right. And Pritzker called him back after that again and again and again.
It's Trump-esque. In the not thinking it through, it's like something the president would do. It's mind-blowing. And you know, again, this is Madigan's guy.
Be very, very careful who you elect going forward. But as Pat said, and we'll continue to talk about this when we come back, after the big story, get involved. I know it's a pain in the ass to go out on a cold night and vote in a primary in March, but you have to. It's 7:33. The big story is next on 720 WGN.
Steve Cochran Show.
Can you say whether or not the president believes that human activity is contributing to the warming of the climate?
Honestly, I haven't asked him.
Okay.
And get back to you.
And do you feel like that is a decision he's still trying to make?
I don't know. I honestly haven't asked him that specific question.
Okie dokie.
Today at 3 o'clock, the President of the United States will decide. Well, I probably will decide at 2:59, but at 3 o'clock he'll announce whether or not the United States will stay in the Paris Accords, which about 99% of the world's involved in. And we should mention, Pat Brady's here, we should mention that the Paris Accord is a voluntary thing. It's a voluntary commitment to help the world achieve 2% greenhouse gas emissions. The piece that Trump seems to have the biggest problem with is the fact that the agreement also calls for us to give $1 billion to third world poor countries to try to have them figure out a way to deal with climate change and to affect change positively in that area. There's no consideration given. You know, this is the jobs president. There are literally hundreds of thousands of climate change jobs that could be created. And I've never, listen, even when I didn't believe in it at all, and I've come around here, I have never said throw all the money in the world at it. Because until there's a cohesive idea on how to fix it, there's no reason to just throw money at it. But there is a reason to take it seriously and to start working towards being better citizens of the planet.
When Tom Skilling speaks at conferences saying, take this seriously.
Yeah, he does a little more science than the rest of us.
Yes.
Take and my it friend seriously. Paul Douglas wrote a book about the jobs that can be created through this. It's real, kids. It's real. And if you care about your kids, your grandkids, and their kids, who you may never meet, we ought to be better people than we've been about this. So, is it the end of the world if he pulls out of this? No, but what do we want to be aligned with Nicaragua and Syria for on anything? All right, Pat, your turn.
Yeah, go ahead, Pat.
Yeah, I haven't read it all, but I do know this. There's another school of thought that thinks that this was too lopsided, that the big polluters, I spent some good amount of time in China, and you can't breathe the air half the time. And these third, that's not a third world country by any means, but a lot of the pollution is coming from these countries that...
We're the second greatest polluter after China.
Well,
we're even bigger than India.
Well, China's pretty bad. Point is, I agree there is climate change. I don't know if it's man-made or not, and what's the risk in trying to protect the planet. But I think some people's point on the right is, you know, it was not a great deal for us, so maybe we should get out of it. I think that's where he's coming from. Now, I'm assuming that Trump hasn't read it either.
I guarantee he hasn't
read it.
But here, symbolism matters, optics matter in politics. Why would you want to do this?
Well, I mean, that's the reasons I give. And you say there's renewable jobs, which there are. A lot of those haven't materialized. We spent a lot of money. President Obama did. And some of this is reaction that he spent all this money at Solyndra and some of those other wastes of money.
Right. But 20 or 30 years ago, there weren't a lot of computer jobs and and internet jobs either.
I get that. And I understand a government investment to create jobs. But you're also killing coal and other things that keep people employed, particularly in this state. So I think what most people are looking for, and probably one of the reasons Trump got elected, was a little more balance in these agreements.
Well, that goes to the Teslas of the world. Everybody wants to pay nothing for gas, but nobody wants to put in new power sources or new ways to create the cars of the future. All these problems have immediate solutions, intermediate solutions, and long-term solutions. There ought to be a transition out of coal, not just shut down plants randomly. But the plants aren't being shut down by politicians. The plants are being shut down by plant operators.
Yeah, but a lot of these plants are being shut down because of the regulatory environment in which they work. And the last administration was very anti-coal and some of the other fossil fuels. I get it. I'm not saying I agree or disagree. I'm just saying that's what happens. And another thing, as a Republican conservative, sometimes it's not good to have the government picking winners and losers, because we see what happens in this state. It's not always good on good public policy. It's on who has the best lobbyists.
Well, here's another one. Later today, the president is expected to have a high-level meeting. And a lot of these are trial balloons. They're leaks, right? They're leaks that come out of the White House about, let's see what the public thinks of this. And in this case, the two Russian diplomatic properties that Obama closed down in December and sent those diplomats home.
Right.
When Vladimir Putin suddenly didn't react, and it was a big surprise, and we found out that Michael Flynn had called the day before and said, don't go crazy here. Those two diplomatic properties may be returned to the Russians. We know for a fact, because we have intelligence agencies who have told us, that there was direct spying and intelligence gathering going on out of those buildings. Okay.
Let alone to Crimea, Ukraine, and the rest of the bad conduct of Putin in the last 8 years.
If I go over to Walgreens and steal stuff and come back here, and then you guys go, did you just steal stuff from Walgreens? And I go, I didn't. I'm going to go back there right now. It doesn't look a little suspicious if I'm involved at the scene of the crime. Why would Trump and company even consider talking about this right now?
When you're under investigation, when you haven't released your tax returns and you had financial interests there, he may not have done anything improper or wrong, but the perception is terrible.
But I don't think he cares. Well, I don't think anybody in the administration cares, or if they do, they just
should
cover
care
it
then, because we care. And it's and to me, Vladimir Putin is a murdering thug. And we shouldn't be playing nice with him. Yeah. And I think most people that really know the world, like Senator McCain and others, feel the same way. I don't understand it.
You're complicit or you're stupid. Those are the only two things you can be in politics when scandals show up. And at this point, those are the two answers to this. Because if he's complicit, he owes Russia, and Russia's saying, we want this back now, and he's on the payroll for them, in whatever terms you want to consider payroll to mean. Or in that meeting in the Oval Office, they asked for it back, and he went, yeah, no, we'll get that done. And because he's Donald Trump, he thinks this is another deal.
Maybe he made a real estate commission. You know, he is a developer. 3%, I can get you in there. I'll wait.
I'll go 2 3/4, but no order.
But another,
it's very valuable property.
Another quick question about Trump not listening to his key staffers. Rex Tillerson, formerly of ExxonMobil, wants to stay in. I know we're going back to Paris, but wants to stay in the accord. Why not listen to him?
Well, he's the president, and that's when you elect a guy, and you got to realize it's a powerful job. He can do whatever he wants. He doesn't have to listen to anybody. Apparently, he doesn't. Particularly people that I guarantee that the Secretary of State's more knowledgeable on this.
But I can tell you, to bring it back full circle before we take the break here for traffic, Mary, stand by. The vast majority of the scientists in the world have all come around on climate change. Right.
I'm not arguing.
And when the scientists, you and I didn't spend a lot of time in science class, and when the scientists are telling
for the
us
record,
this is
neither did Senator Brady.
I don't doubt it. You grew up with him, and it's not out of great concern on my part for the polar bears. But we got to do better by this. You know, there was a time you and I grew up in an era where people threw trash out of the windows of their cars.
I remember the commercials. Remember the Indian commercial?
The crying Indian. By the way, he turned out to be a white guy, which was wrong. But threw trash out of the cars. We don't do that anymore.
We used to throw McDonald's bags out of the cars and didn't think twice about it.
Recycling. We never recycled. Our kids started recycling. We can be better. That's the point. You just don't throw money at it, but we can be better. That's all I'm saying.
I agree, but the argument is that maybe too much money, too much regulation, and is government the right answer? That's something. I agree that there's nothing you can do. It's more important than protecting the environment.
All right. As long as you come around to my way of thinking, I'm always more pleased. By the way, where do you work?
Next generation strategies. And I've been teaching you now for almost 6 years. You've been a fine student.
751 here's Mary. Steve Cochran continuing for a couple more minutes with Pat Brady. Nice to see Pat as always. Eric Edelstein is on assignment. So we're bouncing back and forth here, but let's go back to Springfield. What happens now in the month of June?
What the speakers proposed is a series of town hall meetings so we can discuss what we need to do with the budget, which is code for he's not going to do anything until the very end of June when the fiscal year ends. So we will have probably some kind of stopgap budget.
Which is what, 6 months or less?
Yeah, 6 months. That's what happened last time.
And that stopgap budget will continue to pay the bills at the 85% rate that are legally mandated and the other 15% get screwed?
Yeah, and the 15% that get screwed are probably the people that need it the most.
Absolutely.
Not passing a budget yesterday was just monumentally, like the governor said, dereliction of duty.
The governor actually sounded angry for the first time in a while, which I thought was appropriate.
I'm sure he is. He's got to get a budget to sign or a budget to veto or a budget to work on. You can't just not have a budget, and that's what the speaker chose to do.
There's a loyalty thing with Trump where it goes one way. Is that the same thing with Madigan in your experience? In other words, Cullerton has swallowed a lot of words that he could have said about Mike Madigan through the years. He went out on a limb to do the right thing with Christine Redonio to come up with a document out of the Senate that was workable. When does Cullerton get to the last straw with Madigan?
You know, I'm not sure, but I think with the speaker, it is he has accumulated so much power in every part of the political process, not just the fundraising and the money and the political apparatus, but the control of the process in Springfield. Literally nothing gets done in either chamber or gets completely done in either chamber without going through his fingertips. And that's how he exerts his control. And it gives Senator Cullerton a lot of credit. He stepped out and actually passed a budget, which might not be politically the smartest thing for him to do.
And, wouldn't it be interesting if someone actually didn't care so much about the politics and actually tried to do their job?
That's the point. I mean, he did it, and I'm not sure if it's great politically for some of his folks.
That's the maddening thing, I think, for those of us who aren't involved in this politically and we're just trying to, you know, live our lives, is the fact that the most basic part of your job, you know, show up, do your job, is to pass a budget and then responsibly spend the money. We know you're not going to responsibly spend the money, but at least pass a budget that says this goes here, that goes there. And they seem to want to parade when they do anything little. The fact that Madigan spoke yesterday, he won't do an interview, but he spoke yesterday about how we're going to need more time. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, and listen, this is why, and I know not everybody agrees with me, why I support the governor. For the first time in a long, long time, we have somebody down there that's actually representing the interests of the taxpayers. And we have a voice now, but Speaker Madigan doesn't want to play ball, and this is what he does. And it's about political process to game it out till the next election. It has nothing to do with good, sound public policy that actually helps the people of the state.
So for all the news you're going to hear over the next 30 days about their meeting on the budget, just turn to channel.
Channel 9.
Yeah.
Watch on there.
Or CLTV in an hour. Nice to see you, buddy.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world.
Some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you.
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Come on, everybody, say.
Yeah, Hollywood. You know I love you more than what I should. Yeah, Hollywood. Well, kiss me, kiss me.
By the way, even though the song says, I love you more than white guys should, Dean's open to all races and religions.
Most days.
How are you, buddy?
I was in the grocery store the other day, and somebody was staring at me.
Well, you're a very recognizable celebrity.
I looked like I had just cut the grass, not showered in several days.
Yeah.
It was not one of my prettier moments, but they were like staring bullet holes through me, and then go... Hollywood. They start singing the theme song at me.
Well, that's good. We like that.
Yeah.
Like that. It is a problem because, you know, I can't go anywhere without TMZ following me.
Right.
It's a problem when you just want to go out and just dress like a regular human being as opposed to the tuxedo I normally wear.
Well, I appreciate John DeCoste constantly following me with a full complete band.
Which is nice.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong with that.
No, it's nice of them.
All right, we'll talk about some movies coming up. What else is on the list today?
Oh, did I not send my list to you?
Well, I'm pretending you didn't. No, actually, that's a fact. You actually didn't.
I did not. I actually have quite a few things.
For those that don't know, maybe you're new listeners, Dean is ensconced at Channel 9, and I think you know how painful that can be.
That's right.
And I'm at the Tribune Tower with Andre and Dave.
And normally I send a little rundown so we can pretend like we're spontaneous.
Yes.
But
Jake and Samberg.
This Kathy Griffin thing.
Yeah. More Kathy Griffin. I'm writing this down.
Starting to take a little bit of a Michael Richards. Are we just doing tease now, or do you want some
stories?
Yeah,
we're teasing.
Okay, so we have Kathy Griffin.
Yep.
The Fallout. Dun, dun, dun.
Okay, The Fallout. Got it.
We also have this morning an auction.
Big celebrity auction?
Debbie Reynolds and Carrie Fisher.
Wow.
Auction that's coming up. I'll tell you about that.
Okay.
The latest in the Katie Couric versus a State of Virginia gun club lawsuit.
Yeah, she was in here plugging that documentary she did, and there turned out to be some manipulated footage.
Allegedly. Allegedly.
Well, we're not in the trial. We can just throw accusations around.
Interesting. Well, a judge disagrees with that.
Okay.
So I'll tell you about that in a minute. Glenn Campbell update. He's living with Alzheimer's right now. And also a visit yesterday from Chicago's Alexander Hamilton. Miguel Cervantes, he's doing something amazing for his 20-month-old little daughter who has a rare form of epilepsy.
Really?
Yeah, so we'll... this one's going to
talk about movies. You got a couple of movies to talk about?
A little about. Do we?
Do you?
A couple of movies?
You got that Wonder Woman. Oh, wait, it's only Thursday. What am I thinking?
I'm going to tell you about that tomorrow.
Oh, I'm not coming in tomorrow.
I'm going to tell you. It's great.
Yes, you are.
I'll tell you right now. It's great.
I can't wait to hear.
All right, so that's the list. No movies for you people until further notice.
I can't do the review unless Steve and I are both dressed in our Wonder Woman outfits.
Yeah, and I have my lasso of truth.
The golden lasso.
Right.
Was that what it's called?
The golden lasso, yes.
That's not the lasso of truth?
I know. You're just thinking of Gal Gadot in the lasso.
Golden lasso sounds wrong.
Yeah.
Yes.
Sounds messy.
It does.
I think Trump was in a video involving that. Wasn't there a Trump-Russian video involving that? It's 8:16. It's time now for the traffic. Mary does that.
You'll be calling his name. Oh, 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 oh. Dean Richard, the entertainment editor.
Back to Dean at Channel 9. I don't understand technical stuff, but apparently somebody just told me you had mono. Did he have mono or was he in mono? I don't know. Apparently you have mono or you're in mono.
No wonder I've been so sleepy.
And we fixed it.
So nobody could hear me before?
I could hear you, but they could only hear you in one ear.
You know, that is the kissing disease.
Yes. Well, that Channel 9 morning crew, they're all over each other.
I'm a very affectionate little man.
You know what I say to Channel 9? Get a room. What?
Steve
all right.
Cochran in HD today.
Is that right? We going HD today?
We're going HD today.
Wow, good thing I spent extra time preparing. Kathy Griffin news. Kathy Griffin holds up a bloody, severed head of Donald Trump, apologizes afterwards, but now this whole thing's taken on a life of its own, hasn't it?
Gets fired by CNN yesterday. She will no longer do the New Year's Eve show with Anderson Cooper.
Did you find it funny, by the way? I mean, funny as in odd that she had a contract for that? Because wouldn't you think that would be year to year?
Right.
Yes, especially since almost every year she did something on the show that was that upset the CNN people to the point where you go, well, this year they're never going to let her back again after what she just said. But, you know, the ratings were good. It was, you know, I know Kathy Griffin's not everyone's cup of tea. I think she's funny. And I think that complete odd couple discomfort level between nerdy newsman Anderson Cooper and her was...
Kathy trying to get him out of his pants.
Was very funny.
Yeah.
The ratings were good. It was entertaining. It was something different on New Year's Eve.
Right.
So, yeah, I guess I was a little surprised that there was some kind of long-term contract on that. But that is no longer the case. She will not be doing that anymore, and it makes you wonder, you know, what else is going to get canceled.
Well, she lost a couple of stand-up gigs that got canceled by casinos and things.
Yeah, she had a gig in New Mexico that has been canceled. She's got several others on her calendar that are still on the calendar. The future of those, I guess we're going to find out. The gigs aren't for a couple of weeks from now, so whether they'll be canceled or whether they'll stay. But most important, Steve, she lost... her endorsement or TV commercial that she was doing for the company called Squatty Potty.
First off, I didn't know that that was happening. And secondarily, she should be pleased.
I'm not entirely sure what Squatty Potty is, but I think I saw the commercial.
It is.
It's like a toilet seat, so you don't have to sit down.
It's
as
not
far.
A seat. It's like a stool for your feet, and
that
my
puts
sister,
you in the position you're supposed to be in. Right.
My sister's a physical therapist, and she,
and by the way, keep in mind, I want limited conversation about.
Yeah.
This.
Oh yeah. She okay? though she recommends this. Everybody should be using one of those. She says. Everybody, it for you. She does so much pelvic work on people.
Yeah,
and they have.
By the way, that'll be on Nick's show tonight.
The phrase that pays today.
She does so much pelvic work on people.
But it all these people that have SI out and things like that, it all affects your digestion and things like that. And if everybody
can't you just sit like Donald Trump? Donald Trump in every chair and every it looks like he's sitting on a toilet.
Well, but you should have your knees raised.
This brings your feet up,
and
right?
This would also keep people from getting like hemorrhoids from overexertion.
Okay, this would be the end of our conversation about it, right there. It's funny how we've got to the finish line.
That's the poop on Squatty Potty, though.
By the way, hemorrhoids from overexertion was a really bad name for one of the bands I was in. Now, who is Anderson Cooper going to work with on New Year's Eve? I might suggest Bobcat Goldthwait, but the old Bobcat who still has the annoying voice.
That would be nice. Or maybe
Gilbert Gottfried.
Somebody non-controversial like Gilbert.
Anderson, what time is it? It's very, so very late.
It's so late.
And you guys make it worse. You guys, I don't put Gilbert Gottfried on every time he strolls through town. You guys trip over each other to put him on.
Well, it's because he always says something that's offensive. We know that guaranteed something's going to happen. Guaranteed we're going to have a meeting afterwards.
Right.
It's guaranteed something's going to happen. We tell him every time, Gilbert, can you like tone it down a little bit? Like last time.
Lighten a match.
Yeah, that's the worst thing we should.
Don't ever say that to a comedian.
Should be doing.
Debbie Reynolds and Carrie Fisher, of course, died within what? A day of each other? A week?
A couple of days of each other. And they lived right next door to each other. There was a 3.5 acre estate on which they lived in Beverly Hills. She had one house. Debbie Reynolds had one house. Carrie Fisher had the other. And now that is up for auction, along with many of their personal effects. But, Steve, this honey of a property I want to tell you about.
This is Dean, real estate agent Richard's to the stars.
Dean Richards Real Estate. It's a 3.5 acre estate, swimming pool, tennis court, guest house. We're going to throw in, part of this auction, stage-worn costumes from movies like Singing in the Rain
wow.
and some of the Debbie Reynolds classics.
What are we talking about? What are you listing this as?
Well, this is an auction.
This isn't the house. Can I buy the house?
It's going to be up for auction when the whole thing goes up for auction September 23rd at profilesinhistory.com. You can look at the stuff that is going to go.
Andre, what do you want from there? What do you want?
I don't know, but didn't Debbie Reynolds collect all kinds of old-time movie memorabilia,
yeah.
too?
Yeah, that was her income stream
like
for a while.
She had the
Wizard of Oz ruby slippers.
Yeah. So is that stuff going up, too?
Some of it is. The ruby slippers are, for sure.
I'd like those, Steve.
Yeah. Okay, I'll make a deal on those for you. What about Carrie Fisher's bikini? Is that available?
Well, a lot of Star Wars memorabilia, we know. There was a life-size C-3PO. We don't exactly know what she did with that.
Hmm.
And a bronze Yoda statue.
I got your bronze Yoda.
Statue this is. And the proceeds from this auction are going to go to a mental health charity that Debbie Reynolds co-founded in the Beverly Hills.
Well, that's nice.
Yeah.
It's good. I'm considering this summer, I can't promise you, but especially since we're on HD, or we're in HD now on CLTV every morning at 9, I'm considering growing my ear hair out and doing the Carrie Fisher thing, where they're like buns on each side.
Honey buns.
Yeah.
Hot look.
I think it'd be strong. Really, really strong.
Are you going to do extra grooming now that you're in HD?
Nope. Katie Couric is in the news.
Stop at Earl Shy before you come into the station.
I might get buffed. Something. I don't know if I'll get waxed, but I might get buffed.
Okay.
Katie Couric's in the news.
Katie Couric was...
delightful Katie Couric.
She is a very, very delightful and I think a pretty darn good journalist.
Yep.
She had done a documentary that came out last year about guns. And among the interviews that she did was with a Virginia gun club. They sued Katie Couric, saying that the documentary was edited in a way that made them look like they didn't know what they were talking about. The film's director purposely inserted a 9-second gap of silence when she asked them a question.
A pointed question.
A pointed question. Yesterday, a judge threw out the $12 million federal lawsuit that was filed against her. So the judge decides that there was no basis for this lawsuit.
I was just distracted for a second because the J.B. Pritzker commercial with the kids in the classroom that runs every 4 minutes was on again. I think it'd be cool if they did like some sort of special effects thing where Blagojevich was sitting in the middle of the kids.
Don't scare the kids. Come on.
Hey, and, kids, this is golden, kids.
Okay. And it's come full circle. Look.
Jennifer Garner's in the news. What's going on there?
She is, you may notice, on the cover of People magazine, the cover which says Life After Heartache, which kind of implies that it's Jennifer Garner's story of life after her divorce with Ben Affleck. But on Facebook yesterday, Garner said she did not pose for that cover. She did not authorize that story. She's saying the thing is fake. People magazine standing by their story. Officially filed for divorce from Ben Affleck in April. They share joint custody. They're actually getting along probably better now than when they were married.
Well, that does happen. But I'm confused. So People magazine did interview her or they didn't?
Well, Jennifer Garner says the story that they have in the magazine is untrue. So whether that means that there was an interview and they misquoted her, not telling the story correctly. She says she did not pose for that picture. She did not authorize the story. That's the only quote that she's saying about that.
Have you seen the cover?
Yeah, very attractive.
Okay, so well, she posed for something.
She posed for a picture at some point, but
somebody used it.
Somebody apparently used it.
Didn't People magazine get bought by somebody recently that maybe is shady, or was that Us magazine? One or the other got bought.
Wasn't it?
Was Us bought?
I don't know.
I think Us may have been bought by the Inquirer people.
Steve, I try to stay out of any dealings going on with the mega media companies.
I agree with you completely. I so agree with you.
I try to just bury my head in the sand with those kinds of thing details.
It was. It was Us was sold to the National Enquirer Publishing.
Oh,
company.
Well, then it's perfectly fine
yeah.
then.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, I know stuff I don't even want to know. And tell us about Miguel Cervantes.
Miguel Cervantes is the extremely talented actor who plays Alexander Hamilton here in Chicago. Actually, it's one year ago that he got, put it to me, 1 year ago that my life got completely turned upside down when he got the word that he got this role. He's doing great.
I was a runner-up.
Steve was runner-up. Steve thought that the play was about
I thought it was about Ham.
Kitchen appliances. Steve thought this was a play about mixers and vacuum cleaners. He was completely unprepared when he went in for the audition.
But that's the only reason I lost.
So Miguel and his lovely wife, Kelly, mm-hmm. Have two kids, a 20-month-old daughter named Adeline, who has a very rare form of childhood epilepsy. And, you know, so in addition to moving to a new city, dealing with all of that, they're also dealing with this very severe illness that their daughter has. And they've been, welcome coming to Chicago because we have some of the best children's hospitals and children's care here, which they've been taking advantage of. But Miguel wrote a song for little Adelaide, and I talked with him yesterday. He told me, he just gave me a little update on how she is doing. How's she doing?
She's doing okay. You know, epilepsy is a tough beast. You know, we are... one drug might work a little bit and another drug and sort of it changes, it sort of morphs into something different. So, you know, we have good days and bad days and good times and bad times. And so it's kind of, you know, the battle just is constantly moving yeah. and trying to find something else to do and
right.
And working with new doctors and new techniques and stuff. So, you know, it's tough. It's a tough thing to deal with.
I need you to know that you're stronger than me. My head's underneath all these stormy seas. My thoughts turn to you when I'm standing.
Please. You want to get goosebumps. This song that he performs and he actually wrote himself, called Till the Calm Comes, about his little daughter's strength, what he and his wife Kelly are doing, being the superhero to fight whatever fight comes along. Just will remind you of you know, how insignificant maybe the problems that you have are. It's very, very moving. The song, the full interview and the full song I'm going to feature on my Sunday show this week. But you can buy this song. You can buy a copy of it. It's 99 cents on iTunes. And 100% of the proceeds go to the organization that Miguel and Kelly and Adelaide work with, Citizens United for Research in Epilepsy. So
just search Miguel Cervantes?
If you just go to iTunes and look for Miguel Cervantes or Till the Calm Comes, that's the name of the song, you will be making a donation to
I know you
Epilepsy
warned me,
Research.
But it got me. It got me as soon as I heard the hook, man.
Yeah. Yeah. It's
good for him.
It's something. I'll tell you what. He's about one of the nicest people that I've ever interviewed. He and his wife, Kelly, are so nice, so down to earth, such dedicated, loving parents, as most parents are who are dealing with you know, something like this.
It's just such an honor, though, to be able to take whatever gift you've been given and to be able to pay it forward in a way that you're serving the legacy of your kid who's going through so much.
Yeah, exactly right. Exactly.
So good for him. Good for him. By the way, in a semi-related note that has nothing to do with what we're just talking about, John DeCoste tells me we are just days away from releasing the first promotional announcement for our new musical, Millard, on the life of Millard Fillmore.
I wondered what was going on with that.
Yeah. A lot of people thought it was dead in the water. We got some financing. And then I remembered we hadn't done the bit yet.
Well, Hamilton tried to usurp you guys and let that hype die down.
Yeah.
So now you can just do the reveal.
You remember Aaron Burr and Alexander Hamilton, how that ended.
Yeah.
And there's a point in Millard where Millard Fillmore accidentally shoots himself in the foot. So it's all very dramatic.
Anticlimactic.
In the same sort of way. Millard. You can almost picture it, right? Broadway in Chicago presents Millard.
Millard.
And I'm sure Dean will be on the red carpet for all those interviews.
Yeah, I'm busy that day, but I'll send somebody.
It's a very movie. Marcus LeShock has to cover that.
We're going to be sending. We're going to send.
You said Hoover. All right, I'll see you. 8:34. Big story next. 720 WGN.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
The House remain in continuous session and stand adjourned until the call of the Speaker.
What we have here is insiders who've been in power for decades, who created the current system and refused to change it.
We elect governors, not kings. And so what that contemplates is that governors got to be willing to make some concessions.
Concessions to what? Here's the problem with the governor. The governor drew a line in the sand, and now he's up against a guy who is holding his breath until he turns bluer, and he's not going to change. We know Madigan's not going to change. And I'm telling you right now, I would rather see the governor go, I'm going to sign something, and I'm going to sign it today, and then I'm going to win re-election, and then I'm going to continue the fight. Because the idea that Madigan's going to give up, well, I just don't see that happening ever.
That's actually the argument that Democrats are making. Sign something, sign a budget, and take...
Sign an envelope.
And look at the issues, the agenda issues that you want.
And make a federal case out of the fact that you're signing something you don't agree with because that guy won't move.
Sure.
Yesterday, nothing happened in Springfield. And, oh, what a shock to the rest of us. But the idea that Mike Madigan spoke... I believe I'm right about this. I think the last legitimate interview Mike Madigan did was with you... On the Sunday Spin. I don't think
it's
he's
like
going to...
Patty Vasquez.
Oh, that's right. Yes. I saw my friend Patty Short. And fortunately, she's sleeping, so I won't be in trouble. But she did talk to Patty. But you and Patty, that's it. I don't think there's another time. He doesn't have a phone in his office. He can't call him. Steve Brown's a nice guy, but I'm not interested in talking to Steve. I want to talk to Madigan. And Madigan now for 916 consecutive days has refused to come on this show. So you got a speaker that's not accountable to the people that live in this state where he is at least 50% of the problem. In my mind, it's a lot higher than that. And nothing's happening in Springfield. So predict June for me. What happens now?
A couple of scenarios. One is, and just to get us to where we're at here on June 1st. So yesterday was the deadline for the spring session adjournment. Okay. After June 1st, it takes more votes to pass something in the Illinois legislature.
Right. You had your chance. Now it's harder.
Right. So now it's harder. Senate Democrats approved a $37.3 billion budget on their own. No Republican support. That included $5.4 billion worth of tax increases, including higher income taxes. Senate Democrats did that on their own, sent it to the House. Mike Madigan, He's not going to put his Democrats at risk for voting for that, knowing that if they passed it, including those politically risky tax increases, Runner would veto it. So there was no budget. Madigan, part of Madigan's calculation is now we go into June. It takes more votes to pass. It will take Republican votes to pass something. And Madigan's argument all along is if you're going to take politically risky votes, it has to be shared pain. There has to be Democrat votes, and there has to be Republican votes on it. So that's what brings us to where we're at. The fundamental question is, will anything get done? I don't know, because I think the real kind of catalyst for anything to happen has got to be the issue of schools, and not just whether Chicago public schools open, but schools across the state open.
Right, because then it's at your front door.
Yes, and that's what's in all of these 23 months without a full comprehensive budget, that's, you know, we kept talking about what would catalyst, what would be the change, when would people notice? And unfortunately, the only people that really notice are the ones most in need, most, you know,
people that are hurt most,
disadvantaged, yeah, and need the government safety net, which is basically in tatters.
So knowing that we're not taking care of those who need it most, we also have another big piece of news that came out yesterday, because one of the people that says he can fix it is J.B. Pritzker. He's the answer. Well, it's kind of embarrassing that the Pritzker tapes, as I'm calling them, are now available, thanks to some great work by the Chicago Tribune. I also have a couple of questions to ask Rick about general stuff that goes all the way to the White House, that and journalism. Stand by for all of that. First, Mary. The FBI wiretaps on Blagojevich back in 2008 included the Pritzker tapes. This is J.B. Pritzker and Rod Blagojevich having a little conversation about something J.B. would like.
But I have something else I'm calling you about today, which is I just heard this morning that Alexei might get appointed to something in Washington. Have you heard that?
Yeah, there was like a news report or something that was kind of mentioned, right?
Right.
I find that very hard to believe. I hear that Madigan is pushing labor to try to push the Obama administration to put him in somewhere so they can clear the field for Lisa.
I actually am calling you about, I think you appoint his replacement, don't you?
Oh, interesting. Let's think about that. You interested in that?
That's the one I would want.
Now, here's how about this scenario.
It makes a lot of sense.
Listen, you're extremely open-minded on that. But don't rule yourself out completely on that Senate thing.
Rick Pearson's here, finest political writer in America, host of the Sunday Spin. Some fine work at you guys at the Chicago Tribune. And this is why you need the Chicago Tribune, the Washington Post, the New York Times. You don't know about this stuff unless great reporters go out, do this work, dig it up. And hats off or any other kudos that go to you guys for getting this done. Is there anything that sounds illegal in these tapes?
No, there's okay. Nothing that sounds illegal. But I will say, I think what perhaps sounds troubling is that even though you have Pritzker in one part of the tape try to distance himself from being shaken down for cash from Blagojevich, and goes, well, I don't know that we should be talking about that or whatever, but I hear you.
He almost sounds, in that section you're talking about, like he is aware the phones are tapped, but he still wanted to make the call. Like, no. I don't know if we should be talking about it. I'm not saying he knew that, but I mean, he was careful enough about that, but that yet he did this call we just heard. He's sort of begging to forget.
Yeah, it's a cold call to be state treasurer if Alexei Giannoulias were to have been appointed in the Obama administration. I mean, it's a cold call. I mean, it does show perhaps a greater extent of kind of the intertwining here with and relationship of Blagojevich and Pritzker than, you know, what we knew previously.
Rick, a general question about financing and campaign financing and fundraising. Every candidate has to raise money. I get that. Where does it cross the line and become illegal for Blagojevich to ask, or any politician to ask for money and fundraise? I know Miriam Santos went to prison for that too.
Yeah, well, it's the quid pro quo.
Throws out Sean Spicer every day to get punched in the face, and doesn't take him to meet the Pope. Okay, so he's a swell guy to me so far. We need the daily briefings, even if we just need to be shown that we're being lied to every day. Now they're pulling them away. They're saying the lawyers are the only ones going to answer the Russian questions. Where do you stand on the daily briefings?
Well, I think you made the perfect point that even if you know you're being told lies from that White House podium, you need to be there to, one, still ask the questions and try to represent the public, and two, if you get an answer back that it's a lie, to let the American public know that the official response of this White House, this administration, is a lie.
People want to talk about how tough it is for newspapers, and they're right. It is tough times for newspapers, but the fact is the websites that are out there that you're enjoying content from are there every day. Pick up the paper. Would it kill you? Because there's great reporting being done and increases in circulation going on now, which is one thing we ought to be thanking Donald Trump for, because the news is out there. Both parties are being covered. If you hear the word fake news, put a finger in your mouth and gag, because it's BS. You guys are doing the real thing, and I'm here to say thank you.
Well, thank you, and I will tell you, truly, if you ever doubted about the value of newspapers, pick up any Chicago paper today. I mean, in the Tribune, you've got the story on the Pritzker-Blagojevich
right.
tapes. You've got George Sheldon, the DCFS director,
right.
resigning, after which included a program for closing DCFS cases by
gift
rewarding
cards.
$100 gift cards.
Stuff that matters to your life every day being reported regardless of whose party the subjects are responsible for.
It's your government.
It's your government. Who are you plugging for Sunday?
I've got Democratic governor candidate Chris Kennedy on the show.
Oh, good.
On Sunday.
Good.
As well as the head of the Illinois Manufacturers Association, Greg Bays, the state's business industry, calling this the worst legislative session that they've ever seen.
Other than that, it's all good news. It's my friend Rick Pearson at Rap 30 on social media and in your Chicago Tribune, and every Sunday morning here on 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
Woo! Woo!
Woo!
Ow!
Love that money.
Elise Glenk joins us. ThinkGlenk.com. Everything you need from Elise, including her... You've written more books than Stephen King, haven't you?
No.
A lot.
I've written a lot. I'm actually working on the fourth edition of my first-time buyer book, not as quickly as I should be.
How many total books?
Like 12 or 13.
That's a lot of books.
It's more than I can remember.
Dave, how many books have you written?
I've written none.
Andrea?
I've
thought about writing a book.
And I have at least 30 or 35 books that I've started.
Yeah. I started
none
a
of
novel.
Those. None of Did those you? Equal the 12 or 13 that you've finished.
Your books are awesome.
You're nice.
Well, really. It's true.
Thank you.
So thinklink.com for resources on everything related to Elise, including the stuff we'll talk about today. Why are mortgage rates going down? I thought they were going up.
Yeah, they were going up. It's interesting. And there's a lot of mixed opinion on why this is actually happening.
Well, what's your opinion?
What's my opinion? My opinion is that inflation's down. People are nervous around the world, and so they're still plowing money into the U.S. bond market. It's the easiest explanation, and in the face of, or the lack, I should say, of any other real explanation, it seems to make the most sense.
Even with Trump in the White House, plowing money into the bond market's a safe bet?
What does that say about the rest of the world?
Yeah.
So
that's why people try to break into this country.
I wonder what, for example, like Germany's bond market looks like. I haven't looked at that in a while. But if you look around the world and you think about areas of the world as places for investment, you can begin to understand why, even with Trump in the White House, people are still investing in the stock market and the bond market. And look at where our stock market is.
What's a good return on a bond these days?
Like nothing. But actually, I did see that.
But it's safe. Your money's going to
Your money's going to be there. Whereas, opposed, you know, we talked about this last year. You know, you invest in a mutual fund or in a bank account in Europe or Latin America, and you could be looking at negative returns. Oh, so you give them $100 and you get $99 back, which really stinks as far as an investment.
Yeah, bury
goes.
It in the yard.
Yeah, you might do a little bit better. I am seeing, though, interest rates for some bank accounts, online bank accounts, start to go up. So over the last, you know, since, I don't know, 10 years, we've been seeing bank, you know, put money in a bank account, you get like 0.12%.
Right, which means if you put $1,000,000,000 in, right. you'll get $1,000,000,000 plus 0.12%.
That's it.
0.0012%.
Like nothing, right. Yeah. But I actually saw online there's a... believe it or not, there is a website for people who have $10 million in cash to invest.
No.
It just tells you about
$10 million.
Yeah.
Okay, if you have $10 million to invest, why would you throw it in some website?
No. You have to understand, this is just the cash. They have $100 million invested in other things. They've just got $10 million in cash sitting around. So the goal behind this website, which is interesting, is that we're going to optimize your cash for you. And when I talked to them... A while ago, this was a few years ago when they were just starting out, I said, you know, this would be great for regular people, because what they do is you put your money in and then they have let's say, 5 or 8 online bank accounts that they work with. And so what they do is when the interest rate goes up in one, they automatically move your money for you. And then they move it to the next. And they, and you don't lose anything by just switching between these accounts. You supposedly just gained.
Isn't that called money laundering?
No.
Okay.
No. Is there any...
Because it sounded to me like you're moving money to make more money.
Which is investing.
Oh, I thought it was money laundering.
There's just a very fine line between those two things. Yeah, yeah, and Russia is somewhere involved.
Right.
In it, but,
or prioritizing, depending on... If you do have a little bit of money that you want to save, is there anywhere you can put it where you can make a little bit of interest?
Yeah, you know, you can go and put it in like an online account, like Discover Bank is an online account. All the big banks now have their online versions, which are less expensive for them to run, and so they give you a little bit more. And I have seen interest rates at 0.75% to a little over 1%. Which doesn't sound like much. I know, right. Steve is just absolutely.
I just remember having a little passbook when I was a little kid. Yeah. I used to go in upstate New York. I used to go to the First National Bank of Dryden with my little passbook, and I'd go in there. And, you know, and I put in $10 that I made over the course of, I don't know, a month and a half, 2 months, whatever. And, you know, by the end of the year, I might have 15.
Yeah.
Wait. The best deal going, I think, is some of these youth savers accounts, which I think my kids, even though they're 19 and 21 and a half, still have open with it. Our bank is North Shore Community Bank and Trust. It's owned by Wintrust, but they give you ice cream coupons.
Oh, that's pretty good.
So a scoop of ice cream at the place that they give it to is like $4.50.
Sure.
And so I said to Alex, if you put in $100, it's like you're getting 4.5% on your money. Like you should
pretty
just
good.
Put a lot of hundreds in and all separate. And so what they did over the years is they, and then they'd never go to the ice cream store. So they accumulated this huge stack. So Michael, who's my 19-year-old, would take his friends once he could drive. They would all get in the car and they'd go to the ice cream
store.
And
he was buying.
And he was buying.
Right.
They
that's
loved
pretty
it.
Good.
That's cool.
Well, you do have to keep in mind real-world cash value for things. You remember when Boston Market first opened?
Sure.
Oh, yeah.
A buddy of mine knew it was a good thing, and this is, you know, home-style food at a reasonable price prepared quickly. Well, terrible management. They managed themselves into oblivion. But anybody that goes to a Boston Market occasionally now still goes, it's good.
Yeah.
It's good. They just screwed up the company.
Right. Yep.
But at one point, the stock had dropped so far, he said, he called me on the phone. He's from the car, and he goes, I can't decide. I'm either going to pick up another share of Boston Market or a side item. So you have to know the real world value of the money.
The mac and cheese.
Right.
Hearing healthcenter.com brings you Walter's perspective and then more with Elise Glink. Elise Glink is here, and it is thinkglink.com, just like it sounds. All right, let's say, and there's nobody in the room this applies to, but let's say you were trying to sell a property or you were considering selling a property. Based on what you told us about mortgage rates, right? Go, go, go.
Yeah, it should be absolutely smoking hot to sell right now. And in fact, it's so hot that many buyers can't even afford to buy, particularly at the lower end. So what you're seeing is kind of a slowdown overall, fewer people getting mortgages. This is also contributing, I think, to the fall of mortgage interest rates, a little less demand in the origination side, a little more demand for anybody who wants to refinance. But for buyers, it's a very expensive proposition right now.
So you have people fighting and then a lot of people are selling over list.
Yeah, you're seeing a lot of bidding wars. In fact, on thinklink.com, one of the most popular articles this month is about bidding wars and how to make a really smart bid and get around that. In fact, I was talking with some people from Boston last week. They put a property on the market on Saturday. They had an open house Saturday, open house Sunday. 150 people went through.
Wow.
On Tuesday, they had 6 bids. Best offer, 6 bids.
Come on.
I know, right? They ended up selling it.
Fighting to pay more.
Fighting to pay more. They ended up selling it for something like $75,000 over list.
Good Lord.
They were really happy.
Yeah, I'm guessing.
Selling for condos, townhomes, and homes, all of the above?
Yeah, all of the above. It just depends. And then you get into places like, you know, the North Shore, where things are actually a little slower because the prices are a little bit higher. So it's first-time buyer, and then there's kind of this window of pricing somewhere around $1.3 million to like say 2.5 million, depending on where you are, what neighborhood, what you're selling. And then, you know, things in the like $6 million range seem to be doing okay.
You know, I were talking off the air about a piece in the New York Times on job growth. What was the article?
Oh, on job growth?
Yeah.
It's actually sort of an interesting thing. They're looking at how in an era of the lowest unemployment in 10 years plus, right? We're looking at really, truly exceptionally low unemployment numbers. People are more financially stressed than ever before because they're, if you're not in like one of these high paying jobs, but you're in retail or you're in a, you work for a pharmacy, you're getting odd hours and changes to your schedule at the last minute, you cannot rely on what your income's going to be month to month. You might have 35 hours a week, you might have 15 hours a week.
So even though Amazon is hiring, there's so much retail suckage that the retail sector is bringing down the overall market then to some extent?
Well, it's more that people, I think, are stressed because they don't know what they can expect and they can't plan. You know, planning is everything when it comes to your money.
10 hours this week and 5 next week. And
right. And so if your income is variable by more than the cost of your rent each month, that is a highly stressed position to be in for most people. Remember, the average family of four is earning $52,000, $53,000, $54,000 a year. And so if you have a $1,000 swing in your income per month,
it's a big deal.
It's a huge number.
I get paid here on the number of Trump and Madigan insults I do per show.
Oh, that's good.
So for people that tire of that.
Your income's rising.
Yeah, for people that tire of that.
It's a good year so far.
So easy pickings, you know.
No, not really. No? Not really. It takes a lot of work. Mm. Before we let you go, you were taking a little Riverwalk. You like what you're seeing?
It's beautiful. They just opened up the last piece of it from where you go down at Lake and Wacker, kind of where it curves onto North Wacker Drive. Beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. People are down there. I wish people would not bike so quickly. Like, the game is not to kill pedestrians, but...
Totally agree.
They should really outlaw... I think they should actually outlaw bike riding on the Riverwalk. It's called Riverwalk.
It's too tight.
Not River Bike.
It's too tight there.
Yeah, I agree. And there's too many people, especially after work, who kind of just... Which is great. Which is... Right. They're walking, they're lingering, they're going to the train, and...
They're drinking
having a cocktail.
Wine.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, it's...
City winery.
But overall, they have done such a gorgeous job. It's taken longer than they expected. No question, but it is really worthwhile. And so anybody who hasn't been down there today, I was walking. Lovely not to have to stop on Upper Wacker for cars and just strolling along, enjoying
just
the
fun.
View.
Nice.
Yeah, it was really fun.
Actually, I have one more before I let you go because I need to get paid. Trump today at 3 o'clock is going to announce, like in all likelihood, that he's getting out of the Paris Climate Accord.
Oh, yeah.
Which, because we want to be in the same bed with Nicaragua and Syria, it's a strong company. Those are the other two that were not or are not currently involved. So everything I've seen about jobs, which is what this president got elected on and what he's talking about, amongst other things, including Russia, is that there are thousands and thousands and thousands of potential jobs in the climate protection industry.
Yes.
Sort of the way it looked as computers were blowing up in the 90s. Do you see the same?
Yeah, the number of jobs that are already being created and will be created by clean energy, all forms of clean energy, so far outstrips anything you're going to see in the coal industry that it is hard to understand why somebody hasn't created a big pictorial chart for Trump and put it up in the Oval Office and said, see here, 12 times the number of jobs are going to be created for clean energy versus coal. I know these people voted for you, but why don't you just teach them how to do clean energy jobs and everybody's happy.
Yeah, and put up those types of factories where they need to be in coal-producing areas where people are out of work.
Listen, if you want to see what it's going to be like if we have a world where there is no clean climate, just go to Hong Kong and go to China and start, you know, figuring out.
Bring your own mask.
Mexico, every day of the year, Mexico, except around Easter when all the factories close, or Santiago, Chile. Just go to one of those places and see what it's like to breathe that air. It stinks.
I probably should have asked her about that before the Riverwalk. We could have ended on a nice note.
Oh, sorry. And by the way, I'm going to walk the Riverwalk back to the train station.
There you go.
Are you?
Yeah.
Well, have fun. Watch out for the bikes.
Thanks.
It's Elise Glink. We like Elise. We don't like all our guests. We really like Elise.
Yep.
I mean, you should see the list of people Andre doesn't like. Holy mackerel.
I like everybody.
ThinkGlink.com. Have a great weekend.
Hey, thanks. You too.
And Dave's birthday yesterday, by the way. I know you missed it.
Happy birthday, Dave.
Thank you very much.
Was it 2 days ago?
It was 2 days ago.
Happy birthday, Mr. Sportscaster.
Wow. Suddenly it got interesting in here for you.
Happy birthday to you.
9:31. Big story next.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show.
720 WGN.
It's on 9:44. You're flying. And you want to just get off the plane the regular way as opposed to being dragged off? As a new bill protecting airline passengers in a number of ways, it's the Airline Consumer Protection Act, and Congressman Dan Lipinski joins us to talk about it. Yeah. Who's your co-sponsor on this, Congressman?
I missed the first part of the question
there. I said, who's your co-sponsor on this?
Right now, we're still working on the co-sponsors on this, but I know I will have a Republican co-sponsor when I introduce the bill later this week.
I don't know why anybody on the Republican side would ever not work with Lipinski, because Congressman Lipinski is one of the most moderate, fair-minded, compromise-oriented Democrats there are, and I salute you for that.
I appreciate that. I'm here to get things done. Unfortunately, not a whole lot is getting done these days, and a lot of people just like to yell and scream, and that's how that's what they think the job is, it seems. But I feel like I'm elected to get things done, and in this instance, to help out airline passengers who we've seen, besides the United incident, a lot of other problems that airlines have had. And this weekend, British Airways passengers being stranded because their computer system broke down,
right,
which has happened 36 times in this country over the last couple of years.
Well, you know, the question comes down to, a lot of times, it's weather-related, right, and you can't do anything about that. But how long can they keep us on the plane? You know, can't they find a gate to roll up to so we can get off the plane and get back on? And obviously there's considerations to get the flight out on time, but there's also considerations for just, not losing your mind while you're locked in the tin can for 3 hours or more. So what do you cover in this bill? How are you protecting us?
Well, right now, there's actually, a few years ago, was a requirement that airlines can only keep you on the plane for a maximum of 3 hours. But
seems like a lot.
What I'm looking at here is when a delay is the fault of the airline. So not because of weather, but if it's something that is the airline's fault. If they involuntarily bump you off a flight, if their computer system goes down, a mechanical problem, that's the fault of the airline. The airlines would have to put you on another flight on another airline if, you know, they can't do it on their own airline. This used to be something commonplace, but airlines don't have these agreements with each other anymore.
I remember that. They used to write, it's called writing the ticket over. Yes. They'd write the ticket over, and you'd go over to another airline.
Right.
And almost no airlines have those anymore. And if you read your carriage of contract, which I'm sure everyone does when they purchase a ticket.
No doubt.
All that fine print, that I'm not even sure where you find that. There's one airline that says they will put you on another airline's flight if you request it. Of course, no one knows to request it, so they don't say, well, we will do this for you, but if you ask, they'll do it. So
if it's their fault and you ask, Congressman, they will let you go to a different airline now?
There's one airline that's actually in the contract of carriage that they will do that. I believe that's United Airlines. But you have to ask for it. So first thing is, right now, people should always request that they get put on another airline, because there are things that they will do, but only if you push hard enough.
What if the airline screws up and you haven't eaten all day, or you've got to stay overnight and you don't want to try to lay across three airline seats, or I should say terminal seats? Are they responsible for putting you up in a hotel?
Another part of the bill is to make the airline responsible for providing a meal voucher, and if it's at night, so that you don't have to sleep at the airport, they have to put you up in a hotel. Again, something that airlines will sometimes do, but oftentimes they do not do it.
But you got to ask.
This bill would make that a requirement.
Congressman, we've covered several stories this year where computer systems have gone down or there's been debacles. We hear about this all the time now, a glitch or something of that sort. Then there's delays and cancellations. Will the airlines be responsible for that, not only rebooking and getting you there on as close to on time as possible, but if you do need to stay over, will they take care of that under these circumstances now then?
Yes, because a computer system crash is the fault of the airline. A lot of airlines have failed to invest in their computer systems. And I also have another piece of this bill that requires the airlines to really, well, I should say it prods the airlines to fix and upgrade their computer systems.
Yeah, and there's a government accountability piece of this which says you're going to fix your IT, you're going to let us know what your IT fix is, and that way when you have an IT problem, we can look at the paperwork you've given us and say, well, how come it didn't work? You said it would. Here's the documentation.
Yeah, so it essentially forces the airlines to take a look at this, report to the Government Accountability Office and the FAA what their plans are, and it's a way to push them to actually take care of this problem. And like I said, it's been more than 36 times over the last couple of years that these IT problems have happened, and obviously this is something that can't continue. When it happens, you get delayed, flights get canceled, as we saw this weekend for days. British Airways could not fly anywhere, and everyone was stuck.
It's Congressman Dan Lipinski. If people want to see more about the bill, is it up on your website yet?
It should be up there, lipinski.house.gov.
All right, and what's the latest on the feelings in Congress off the record or on the record about the president?
Well, it's interesting because obviously there's great concern over what the revelations that continue to come out. I'm certainly extremely concerned. These investigations have to move forward. Everyone's interested in if Comey will testify, former FBI director.
Supposed to be next week, right? Yeah.
If that actually does occur, we'll see what he says. But as many people say, there's a lot of smoke. We haven't seen the fire yet, but we need to keep at this. And but the other important thing is that we don't use all our energy just looking at this. And everyone in Congress, the committee's looking at it, need to look at it, thoroughly investigate. The FBI, the special prosecutor really needs to deep dive into this, find out what happened. But everyone else in Congress has to focus on doing our job every day. There's a lot of problems we need to solve in this country, a lot of issues we need to work on, and we can't just let this suck up all the time that we have, because that's not good for the American people.
Nice to have you on again, Congressman. Enjoy your weekend.
Thank you. You too.
That's Congressman Dan Lipinski. And the Airline Consumer Protection Act, ACPA.
This is much needed, too. And remember what he said, ask. Because
ask.
Even if you're not flying United, which is covered in this bill, remember they used to move you all the time?
Sure. Peter Greenberg talked about it all the time, too. Ask.
Yeah.
Talk to a human being.
Yeah.
Ask. 9:52. We'll come back. Big star birthday I missed yesterday. Even bigger than Dave's birthday.
What?
This week. Yeah. It's big, Dave. It's big.
Someone here? Someone on the show?
No, big megastar. Even bigger than that.
Wow.
And Bill and Wendy coming up on 720 WGN.
Go ahead. Make my day.
Happy birthday, Clint Eastwood. 87. And supposedly has deals to make 3 movies.
Oh, yeah.
87 years old. Here's a quote. If you want to be in for the long haul, you just have to trust your judgment about the material. If you go whoring around for money, the audiences will figure you out. They know when you're being a jerk and when you're just trying to get them in a room and show them a movie they don't even care about. My friend Tom Dreesen, who is good friends with Clint Eastwood, said, I said, how does he keep doing it? And he said, Clint Eastwood has one secret. He doesn't let the old guy in. I said, who's the old guy? He said, the old guys make your legs hurt. Old guy make you cough. Old guy give you a stiff back. Clint Eastwood doesn't let the old guy in. Old guy tries to get in. Clint Eastwood says no. Old guy's not coming in.
You know what he calls Orion? Kid.
Kid, that's right. That's right. I got to play a piece of sound here. Sean Spicer from yesterday. And by the way, happy Covfefe to all of you. We know that Covfefe was a typo. The president seemed to handle that typo yesterday with some self-deprecating humor, which he's not exactly known for. And he did that by saying, Covfefe, who amongst us knows what it really means?
Enjoy.
Yeah. Sean Spicer, apparently so afraid of President Trump that he felt like he had to lie again, said this yesterday at a briefing.
Do you think people should be concerned that the president posted somewhat of an incoherent tweet last night and that it then stayed up for hours?
No.
Why did it stay up so long? Is no one watching this?
No, I think the president and a small group of people know exactly what he meant. Blake.
What does he mean?
Blake.
What does he mean?
Blake.
What is Covfefe?
Blake.
No, but see, you can't
Blake.
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 Let me go to Bill Leff on this, known linguist. What does covfefe mean?
Steve, it's not a word.
It's not a word?
It is not a word.
It's made up?
Yeah, we've got, we have a book at our house that we call The Dictionary, and it's filled with words.
I'm not familiar with it.
Oh, yeah, it's great. You got to get this dictionary. And that word is not in the dictionary.
Did you look it up? Like, you used to look up dirty words when you were in school?
I still look up dirty words, but this word was not in the dictionary.
Well, I would just like to wish you a happy covfefe.
I would like to do the same to you.
I bet thanks. Webster's adds this. You know, they add new words at the end of every year.
Covfefe is word of the year.
I bet they add that.